Hi guys, it's Friday, the 29th of October. This is We Are Curious, and my name is Ali Mwakaneno, your host. And back to the podcast, guys, is our amazing financial analyst. His name is
Felix Achim.
Yes, and I know you guys missed us last time. I'm sorry we couldn't be there, but then we're back bigger and better. And there are a couple of things we want to talk about. But before we do that, Felix, how has your week been? And what really caught your eye in the news this week?
First of all, Ali, it's very interesting. My week is awesome. One of the things that has really happened that I think I know personally love this week has been, I've been following a lot on crypto. I'm looking on the Shiba Inu and Dogecoin wars. I'm part of the Shiba army. So yes, I am definitely hoping that things would be better for us. Despite having a little bit of a downtrend over the past few days, but Shiba is the next big thing. I mean, we took over Dogecoin, we've taken over XRP, we're winning this. So all the hodlers, I know you're listening out there, stand strong.
And then later you realize that you're the only Shiba holder around.
You know, like that point in Wolf of Wall Street where
Oh my God! Please don't get me started. Have you seen the memes on Meta? So I saw this meme. Of course, one of the biggest news I've seen this week is the Facebook name change and guys speculating on, you know, the multiple things that will come out of that. And yesterday Facebook announced that it's going to be called Meta. And there's this meme of from Wolf of Wall Street still, where we have Leonardo DiCaprio saying there's this new company called Meta. It has a very, very clean reputation, which I found very, very, very ironical, given that, you know, Meta is just Facebook with a new name.
Meta is just, it's like having your kid called Kenya and then somebody calls it Kenya, you know.
Right.
Maybe it's a little bit different and somebody else might find it different, but the same thing, you know. But somebody says Meta technically means make everyone, and let me just get it right. Somebody said manipulate everyone through advertising.
I really don't want to get into Zach's radar at this point. I'm still a very, very, very young creative. But then something else that caught my attention this week is it was properly covered on the HISA newsletter, which was Apple results and Amazon results. And according to the newsletter...
That was today, right?
Yeah, that was today's newsletter. Yeah. Amazon was a cloud away from announcing a loss. Did you get that?
Yeah. You know, I think there's a lot. This thing here that Amazon is actually... If it wasn't for Amazon Web Services, then Amazon would have reported loss for the third quarter. That's just how serious this is. But I think cloud computing is becoming very interesting. We're seeing web services, even for Microsoft. We saw the other day what happened with the cloud computing for Microsoft.
Yeah, cloud computing was the cash cow, essentially. Yeah.
Looks like everybody's working from home. Everybody needs to take off-site and probably save them. Guys, there are very few people who can access the cloud. We know Elon, we know Jeff Bezos, we know who else, Richard Branson, even Bill Gates isn't in a position to access the clouds at this time.
Right.
Unless Microsoft is working on launching a few, probably also launching his own kind of Blue Origin.
I mean, I don't know, but here's the thing, Felix. Back to Amazon, what do you think happened? Guys are technically still working from home and e-commerce is still a big thing. What changed?
I really think it comes at a curious time because the last time we saw Amazon post a loss was in 2014 actually. So it's been a little bit of an uptrend for a very long time. And it comes in at a point when, you know, Jeff left the company, I think, a few months ago. And the new guy comes, but then there's also a disruption within the global supply chain industry. And so we also have to talk about, I'm sure that's something we definitely want to talk about, and we can, you know, slot in some time and look at how the entire global supply chain industry is affected.
Right.
Yeah, because I think that's the main reason why we've seen both Apple and also even for Amazon, why, and we've seen every other company. We even saw companies that really, I don't know why they would say the supply chain would affect them, but other companies like even Facebook, you know, and even Snapchat would, do we have physical deliveries for Facebook? Maybe they have, I don't know, maybe, you never know that.
Maybe the data they collect from people is too much to load it into trucks and transport it. But I'm happy we actually mentioned e-commerce on Amazon, because that's something that we're going to be talking about today. And in case you're out there wondering where we'll hit on e-commerce, it's actually the announcement that DHL Africa eShop is closing shop in the continent, which I found quite interesting, because hey. I mean, guys, it's DHL. They have
moved the world.
They literally moved the world. So I was thinking, they had figured out e-commerce, at least from, you know, from a logistical point of view. But then, alas, here we go.
Looks like it's very, very technical. Looks like you can have.
Well, clearly they are taking the L. Here's the thing. Let's actually get to it. Sorry, I know usually we start with what's happening in local markets. We'll get there.
Local markets?
Yeah. No, come on. We have to talk about day trading, and we have to talk about the president's directives.
Yeah.
Since we didn't have We're Curious last week. I mean, between the last We're Curious and right now, they've lifted the curfew.
It's actually been a lot. Remember a few weeks ago, we also talked about and the fee. And the court
changed, stopped, yeah, that, right?
Exactly.
Damn. Saying, like,
no, you guys are not moving. Very interesting.
Felix?
A lot of stuff. I don't know if you're going to have this conversation.
No, we are not. I mean, I understand that the curfew has been lifted, but I'm still used to being in the house by 9. It's weird. Anyway, our first story for the day. Since we have our chief financial analyst here, Bwana Felix, NSE introducing day trading next month. I know that one of the things that we've talked about on this platform is the need to deepen Kenya's capital markets. And in case you're wondering why this is very, very important to us, Absa recently released the Africa Financial Markets Index 2021, and Kenya fell 4 positions down, fell to actually 11th position. And one of the metrics that we scored really, really poorly was the capacity of local investor. So I actually sat down with someone from Absa, Anthony Kiri, the head of global operations, and we were discussing, hey, how can we make how can we deepen local markets? And something that came up in that conversation was day trading. This was a conversation that we had last week, and it's already live. Check out our Spotify page, check out our Anchor page in case you want to listen to that podcast. Short and sweet, 11 minutes in, out. But back to the subject here, day trading was something that came up. And then 2 days ago, the NSE announced that it's going to be launching day trading. Felix, could you break down to us why this is important?
Well, guys, the first thing here that we really have to talk about is what is day trading. For those of you who are probably novices within the investment space, for a very long time, the settlement cycle. So the settlement is the settlement period for the market is technically when you buy your stock today. When does it become balance free? So by balance free means you can actually be able to sell it on the market. So in this case, we know that for a very long time, the NSE has actually had a T+3 settlement system. And most of the people don't actually understand this, but settlement is actually not done at the Nairobi Securities Exchange. Settlement is done at the CDSC, mm-hmm. That's the Central Deposit and Settlement Corporation. And this has always been a T+3, first of all, because of the system that was there in place, And also another thing was because of the various integrations, including GCMS, which I think has not been integrated with.
What is GCMS? GCMS, bro.
Don't worry, guys. That's not that. Now, that is where we leave some for next week. So this integration, this is just the various settlement systems that are used by banks. And so the main reason has always been because of one has to justify various transactions and all this stuff. But now we're seeing in this case, for the first time, we're actually seeing Central Bank of Kenya, not Central Bank, the Nairobi Securities Exchange, after the various integrations with CDSC. And also there's a few days ago, we had all the data. There was a press release by, was it CMA that actually admitted CDSC on various stuff, including the, what was that? There was the data about the SLB, that Securities Lending and Borrowing, and then also coming in with other metrics as well. But now, Ali, the one thing that I think we really have to look at now is, for the NSC, one of the things that has been affecting investors for a very long time has always been about guys coming in and saying that their transactions would public. Because the cost of transaction on the NSC has been high over time. And I think I would really want to dive deeper into this and just give guys the data how it is. For a very long time, we know that the NSC charges about 2.1%, which currently with the taxes being included, it's about 2.2% for you to trade on the market. And then once you trade with the 2.2%, then what comes next is, you need to ensure, remember this is 2.1% per transaction, which technically means that on the buy side, it's 2.1% or 2.2%. On the sell side, also 2.2%. That effectively means, if you're using the rate that the brokers would always tell you, which is 2.1%, then you need your trades to go above 4.2% before you can be able to trade on the exchange, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what NSC is really telling guys is you can be able to, with the T+1, now to narrow it down further, is with the T+1, NSC is telling you, you can, with the day trading, you're actually able to trade, you can buy a stock, within 15 minutes, you can actually be able to
sell it.
And like what we previously had, where if you bought a stock on Monday, you had to wait until Friday to sell it, because the stock would settle on Thursday, that would make them balance free on Friday.
So what happens in case we have changes in the position between those 3 days?
If there's a position, you have to buy the loss. So you take the task. But then also one thing that guys don't really know is that for the day trading would actually be very good. But looking at it now from a justifiable point, unless the NSC and the trading partners, the trading participants, get to agree to reduce the levies or the charges of transaction, because you know the big thing here is to bring the commissions, the charges as down as possible, increase the transaction volume, and then once that goes up, then you know, you can be able to make money as much. And that is what global markets and trading within various global markets are. Actually, in some markets globally, you don't actually have a commission being charged. The broker is not charging the commission. They're actually gaining on markup fee, you see? And so, because, you know, traders like Robinhood, for instance, you see they always talk about commission-free trading.
Right.
Why? Because they're just making the funds, that they're making their returns through getting various markup charges. Now, in this one for the NSC, it would be interesting to see how far brokers would actually bring their commission down. Because if we were to look on various markets and just how to look even on the NSC today, if you were to trade and say you're going to pick up, say, like on a T+1, and you need to get your 5% before you be able to exit, then I think probably only three companies or only four companies or about four gainers on the market today would probably be able to. Unless you probably want to make your 1%, which I think is a challenge. But the first thing for me is for the brokers to reduce their cost of trading from the current 2.1% to probably lower, maybe about the minimum maximum of 0.5, in my opinion.
That's a hell of a cut.
Hell of a cut, but you know what? If I'm trading four times in a day, you're charging me 0.5, you're probably making money, right? Yeah, if I buy and sell, you're still making your 2%. And then also, this will actually be a rise in terms of, you know, the the levies and the taxes that you see the brokers, and also even for there's usually the CMA levy, the NSE levy, CSE levy. This is just a good. So that's what I'm saying. I mean, once we bring this commission down, and then we look at it on the long term, with a higher volume, we're actually seeing investment banks going to make more money than they actually do right now. It's what global markets are doing, and we're seeing investment banking units for most of these top banks are. If you look at the global banking system, guys are making more money. Why can't we have that happen here on the local market? And what one thing that I was saying is, if we have this continue, or if we have this probably, if we have the system that we're seeing being brought in place with the current commission charges, then for today, you'd probably only trade in five stocks that actually made it above the threshold, which is 4.2%, which is Home Africa, which was up 5.26%, Olympia Capital, which was up about 5.26%, Transcentury Limited, which was up 6.3%, Liberty, which was up about 6.67%, and Bank of Kigali. In all these stocks, if somebody wanted to make some good money, they'd probably only have Bank of Kigali. Because looking at all the others, who trade for just a 2% gain? Because why would I sell, if it's Home Africa, why would I sell Home Africa at a 4.2%? Probably I'm going to make just 1%. So that means if I had invested worth 1,000, or if I had bought 1,000 shares and it's up 1%, I think that is like transaction fee for investor. You know, it doesn't make sense. So I think that's number one. And then the other thing which the NSE should look at doing is lifting the limits of trading. And this is now in line with CMA. The ceiling and the floor for trading has always been 10% for every stock, unless there's a corporate reduction. One of the things that the NSE can do is to, you know, lift on the ceiling and probably bring it to 20%, where a stock is allowed to move as much as 20%. I think that is the thrill that day traders usually love, where you tell somebody, I put in my 1,000 shillings, it's now 1,000. You know, let a stock move up to 20% before you probably do it, and then you can make a lot of other stuff. Like it goes up 20%, but you can probably put a circuit breaker at 15%, where if it goes to about 15%, then you can halt the trading for about 15 minutes to cool it down, and then you resume trading. That's what you see in major markets
globally. But why exactly do we have a threshold that low in comparison to other countries?
It's always to, weirdly enough, it's to protect the investor, because you know, you're looking at it from a different angle.
You're looking at it from a gain point of view.
Yeah, from the gain perspective.
Right.
But if you look at it from the loss perspective, somebody who wasn't looking at the stock for the portfolio yesterday, you wake up today and you see your stock has plummeted 80%. You know, I think that's one thing I personally would.
Right.
Yeah, but if I can be able to, the NSE gives you up to, you know, about like, say, the NSE would give you maybe about 2 weeks to just look at your portfolio. And that's why one of the things that we always talk about when we're talking about personal finances, guys would always be able to, you know, get into, guys should always look onto their portfolio as much often as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because in this case, if you're looking at this from another angle, Ali, once again, is if you were to have your portfolio drop the same way we saw in previous times, you've seen companies. Like an example is about most recent China Evergrande, right?
Mm-hmm.
In global markets, where China Evergrande would drop up to, you know, up to about highs of about like 20% in a day. So if you look at it in terms of year-to-date levels, by the time when Evergrande was defaulting on the payment, as much as it later came back and paid advisory, Evergrande made those payments, and you went, So when they were late onto that, Evergrande was down about 80% yesterday. Can you imagine if that 80% happened in a single trade? One of the things that we've seen over time, and to give guys, when stocks like, when major companies like Lehman Brothers filed for bankruptcy, and on that day the stock plummeted, you know, about 75%. Can you imagine that stuff? That's what happened to your
portfolio. That's crazy.
Yeah, but on the upside, actually good, because if the stock would rise 75%, I mean, if you don't want your stock, like you probably bought Tesla or you probably bought Shiba Inu coin and it's gone up 80% in a day, man. I mean,
what you're a happy man.
Yeah, you're a happy man. And that's the problem that investment bankers have had over time with investors. Guys wouldn't complain when the portfolio is on the rise, but guys would actually complain when they come back and the portfolio drops, and they would be like, oh my God, you never told me that this stuff was coming
back. Isn't it human nature to sort of prefer good news over bad news?
That was stressful. But yes, NSE, there's a lot you can do, and day trading can work, but only if they don't play with their ignorance, or if they don't play around and assume that retail investors are. Because that's always that, let's give them day trading and then let's not think about day trading. They will always buy. But how about you do the favor and tell them, hey, it's day trading and we can give you guys up to 0.5. I'm actually looking at markets telling guys, hey, you know what? We can trade, we can make up on one. We'll probably just have a little bit of backup charges again. You definitely get your trade done at 0.1. Because fund managers are getting good deals out here.
And the investor isn't.
Yeah.
And that's definitely something that we can look into in our other podcasts. I know it's something that you're going to touch on Markets Monday. And maybe we can have a deep dive on how essentially what are the little ropes that move around when you invest on the NSE, all the way from understanding the charges to the different ramps that prevent you from getting into the water, or you getting the fish in this case.
This is something I need to
know. Mm-hmm. Right.
The Naira.
Oh, speaking of that, have you seen what's happened to the shilling just before we even go to Nigeria? Because today we hit 111.4. That should be an all-time low for the shilling, isn't it?
Yeah, but come on, guys. Do we care? We can afford it. We're rich, right? There's no inflation. And talking about inflation, the CPI numbers have actually come out. Yeah, right now. They're just streaming in. Because I'm just seeing the data. I have just received this right now. And I'm just seeing that. Oh, my God. Okay, a little bit of bad news, guys. You're not out of the woods yet, but much, much better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing the few inflation highlights have come in, and food is up at 10.6%, and non-food, non-fuel is up at 2.6%, fuel is up 10.6%. Jeez, come on, guys. Can we really have this in a country? Yes, we can. Here in Kenya, we have it all this. The highest thing that came up last time was actually the CPI in data from the Kenya National Bureau of Statistics coming in and saying the overall inflation for the month of October was pretty low, yes, dropped down a bit at 4.84%. This is compared to, this is actually in October. But let's see, I'm just getting, October 2021 was at 6.45%,
mm-hmm.
lower than what we had in September, which was at 6.9%. So we're seeing a little bit of some ease coming in.
But then still, we're not exactly out of the woods, are we?
Exactly. Still a bit of a challenge. But all in all, we can pray and just hope that things will be better. At least I'm praying for you as a Kenyan. I am probably not a Kenyan. I'm an alien in this, but yes, I'm in Kenya, so definitely I'm being affected by this. Oh, I'm Kenyan, guys.
You're from the UK, United Kisumu. Felix, there's... I interrupted you halfway through your tracks. You were discussing the Naira.
Oh, guys. So the Naira is actually headed for its worst weekly decline. And the data comes in like in 8 months. So probably since February, when CBN was on the banning of cryptos and everything. And they were saying that guys were using crypto to manipulate the Naira. Remember that, Ali?
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like even with Central Bank of Nigeria actually launching its own e-Naira, we are seeing e-Naira headed for one of the worst declines in 8 months. And this is, I don't know, but we're seeing, the Naira currently trading at about 480 Naira per dollar. That's when you thought like any shilling was
bad. I mean, Kenya and Nigeria have a lot in common. Well, except
it's down a bit. gonna be close at 409 naira.
Right.
And still that's very high. Whew. Jeez. Earlier today the naira actually touched a high of 420 and 40 naira. That's 120 naira and 40 a dollar. And I think this is one of the cases we're seeing. Central Bank of Nigeria is really, really trying to contain I think the naira so that it can actually at least march a few. And we're seeing this, and I think the naira should be one of the strongest currencies within the continent. Yeah, still really sad. But on the best thing here, I think for guys, the best thing for me, I think, is that Nigeria is actually saying that they're hoping that Aliko Dangote is going to complete the, because he's been constructing a refinery in, I think, towards the coast of Nigeria,
mm-hmm.
and he's looking at producing about 650,000 barrels a day oil production in Nigeria. I think that is actually good for Nigeria. Yeah, but this would actually save Nigeria about 30% for foreign exchange currencies. Yeah, but let's see how this goes for the country.
I think that's really, really not something I want to touch right now. I thought the e-naira would make for a good case in BBW, bulls, bears, and whiskey. So I think that's something that we can look into there. Felix, something, I know this is old news, but I thought this was a very, very important discussion to have. In the president's speech, when the president decided that it is time to finally free us from the chains of being in the house by 10 p.m. He announced a slight, allow me to call it a recommendation, in terms of transaction limits for banks. And previously, transactions below, was it $10,000, which was around 1 million shillings. Guys, the Kenyan shillings is not at, the Kenya versus the dollar is not 100 shillings anymore. It's 111, and we have to take note of that. But we had that change when it comes to, how should I put this? Financial institutions being required to report transactions above a million Kenyan shillings then. And the president said that he realized that, you know what, this framework was not really, really favoring small businesses, given that cash is still king in Kenya. So we are considering lifting that. What do you think? Do you think the 1 million threshold was reasonable, both when it comes to, you know, fighting terrorism financing and money laundering versus allowing businesses and individuals access their money easily? Because I know that withdrawing 1 million or 1.1 million over the counter had a slightly longer procedure because there was more paperwork to it.
Why did you not
do it? This is, from my experience, I've actually worked as a teller in a bank. Let me tell you,
Manna. I really hope it's not everything.
I cannot discuss this on this podcast. No, visit my LinkedIn, Felix.
Visit Dubai Islamic Bank.
Felix, move on. Anyway,
is it Kenya Commercial Bank? Just come on. I think everybody is waiting in the bank.
Trust me.
I really have a plan.
They're not.
Is it equity?
If you really want to know what bank I worked in, just put it on our Telegram channel right now. I will say. Let's make this democratic. Anyway, Felix, what I was trying to say is some of the people that actually needed 1 million in cash include guys who would pay farmers. So in the area where I worked in, there's brokers and the guys who owned cotton plantations would have to come and withdraw large amounts of money to pay the guys who were harvesting cotton. Then we had guys who also grew cashew nuts, same thing. Most construction projects actually pay their casual laborers in cash. So
it's even actually
Well, not. I mean,
it is a very, very.
No, that was mostly for the farmers.
I walk with 10,000 shillings in my pocket.
Felix, that's because you stay in Nairobi and this place is just a mess. But anyway, so those were some of the people who would actually require over a million in cash.
Still wondering why this cash. I mean, I still think you can do a lot. You can automate most of these payments. And if it's like paying guys in, because most of the time people say like I'm paying my workers and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But guys who don't always automate this, we have Safaricom, which has the bulk payment service, and you can actually pay.
Felix, let me tell you exactly why that doesn't sit right with me. Okay, a casual laborer, mtu wa mjengo, mtu wa mkono, on a high end. No, hear me out. Forget Fuliza. On a high end, they earn what? Punch a day. That's in Nairobi. If you go to other parts of the country, it's between 300 to 400. Okay. Yeah. If you pay this person 500 shillings on their M-Pesa, and then they have to withdraw it. What's the withdrawal charge? Should they choose to keep it? They go by steamer. What's the transaction charge for paybill? Why incur all that cost? What I'm trying to say is, for someone who earns 500 a day, for someone who earns like 500 shillings a day, 27 shillings on a transaction charge is a lot. Exactly. And that is why, like, I in as much as I prefer electronic payments, I understand why cash is king, mostly in the informal sector, which forms a bulk of Kenya's economy.
Yeah. I really feel like,
outside,
I think we know the 80% of MSMEs, this is micro, small, and medium enterprises, actually is about 80%. 80% of the transactions are actually cash. So it's very important here that we see that these transactions, which form a bulk of the daily transactions that we have, and guys need to save this money in the bank and not probably under the mattress or something like that. We have guys that bank a huge amount of money in every single day. I think CBK should just, and all the banks should just have a greater watch, but not to limit the kinds of transactions, because it's your money. Remember, we've seen cases like looking at it from global cases. And I remember there's a time when Aliko Dangote said when he became a billionaire, he went to the bank and asked them to give him $1 billion in cash.
Mm-hmm.
And he took it and just went home with it, and he just wanted to have a feel of it. I mean, if I have my 10,000 in Equity Bank, for it,
right,
and I feel Equity Bank is probably having issues out here, and I can say like, hey, I'm actually withdrawing my 10,000. Let me go and sleep with it today, and then I can bring it back tomorrow. You know, I probably feel safe with it under my pillow. But whatever we've seen in recent times has actually been where if you're putting in a transaction of above $1 million. Actually, it wasn't really $1 million, to be honest, because I think any time when the transaction was even about $600,000, right, about $900,000, it would really depend with the way, I would say, depending on a lot of things. First one is the teller was probably there at the desk. And then another thing that I think would also come into play would also be to you as an individual, what's really happening. You know, if you go into that, if you get into the bank and you deposit in your million, most of the time you find that probably your account has never had that sum of money, then those would raise eyebrows, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what we saw a lot of guys do is guys were now making various deposits in very small things, where you find somebody would probably do probably like three transactions. Probably if you have
a
million, you're doing like 400, 300, and then you're doing the balance as well later on, you know?
Yeah, but then if you do that within a short period of time, most tellers would flag that, because again, everyone sees that you just... Well, not AML. If you're
it's something
that someone should definitely look into.
Or yes, usually
have to.
I think
it's
just in the morning at 8 a.m. Then at around noon you're probably doing it. I think guys found ways to go around it.
My question is, do you think it's a good idea to lift that threshold? Because here's word in the streets, where I belong, is that the waiving or the lifting of that threshold was for political reasons, especially given that the campaign is around the corner, and being Kenyans, we all know that campaign money is given out in cash, not in Pesa or RTGS.
It's not welcome.
What is it called?
What handouts?
Right. That in your head, that sanitizes it, doesn't
Yeah.
it?
Makes it much, much better. Political handouts, and it's so annoying. I would really want to touch into politics, but it gets into a very crazy point where we actually see politicians say they don't deposit their money because they don't transact with the bank because of the various regulations they don't want banks to know. Yes, so, so well. Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're politicians. But this is not a political show, guys. Just as we always say, we're into business and tech only. And the economy.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, back to you.
Here's what I think, yeah. Instead of like I would rather see or rather understand from where I sit, I'd rather we seek to understand why cash is king and what are some of the barriers that we need to reduce to actually encourage people to use, alternatives to cash like mobile money. Because it's not like the people who are paid in cash don't actually use mobile money. They do, but then why do they prefer their payments in cash? And from where I sit, one of the biggest impediments to this is the transaction charges of mobile money. And I'm going to keep saying this. Being charged 23 shillings to pay 200 shillings on a pay bill is just sinful. And in my opinion, that's one of the biggest impediments to digital or rather mobile money, which would provide a better digital footprint, which is way easier to trust when it comes to, understanding the nature, the origins, and subject to the information required, the purposes of the transaction. But moving on. Felix, on a more regional at a more regional tune, before we head to what's happening around Facebook, Meta, and everything, DHL eShop shutting down. This is why I found this story interesting, yeah. Apart from the fact that DHL is definitely a logistic powerhouse in the global, there are those expectations that we have. It's DHL. Since they've figured out global logistics, it makes them an ideal partner to bring in global brands to Africans, which is what they were doing. Two, I found this news shocking because you know what? 2 years ago, DHL was actually had actually expanded DHL eShop, which they are shutting down tomorrow, by the way. That expanded, I think totally they've launched around 35 countries. And in 2019, they were expanding to, I can't really remember the names. But anyway, the CEO then, Heini Hayman's, had said that it's an impressive usage on the platform. And while they started in South Africa, Nigeria, Kenya, Mauritius, Ghana, Senegal, Rwanda, Sierra Leone and Uganda, they were actually eyeing more countries. And at that time, people were like, you know what? There's finally a big company with the logistic muscles to take on, the allegedly or the earlier mentioned Amazon for Africa, which is Jumia. Why do you think they're shutting down, by the way? What's happening, bro?
I don't know, but I think that we're seeing here that I think, to be honest, we're seeing we are seeing into this case where companies are figuring out. And Ali, I think the first thing to note is we really have the disruption in the global supply chain industry, and we mentioned that we were starting this. So, And I think that's one of the reasons why this is a shot. But it's probably also because of the, I don't know how to put it. Maybe, but first of all, just before we move into this, I'd love to know your reason. I'd love to know, because I know this is something you've been following. What did DHL say was the main reason?
That's the thing.
Is it because like the unit has not become profitable? Or what's really the case? Is it competition? Or what's it?
That's the thing. They didn't. They were hush hush on this. They didn't say why. We just noticed that some of the features on the platform are disabled. The app DHL eShop was actually pulled down from app stores, and they're shutting down tomorrow. But then we're not so sure. That's actually in sub-Saharan Africa. We're not so sure whether they will shut down in Middle East and North Africa. And just a disclaimer, the eShop was actually not developed by DHL. It was, of course, developed by a Nigerian company called Linkomas, which is owned by Mall for Africa. And that's something we probably notice if you look at the two applications. Then, you know, when I hear the eShop is closing, I start getting worried about, you know, other little e-commerce platforms in Africa, you know? I had mentioned this, your Kilimall, you know?
When was the last time somebody used?
I don't know. I barely shop online. And if I'm shopping online, I am definitely not doing it on Kilimall. I have personal reasons that I cannot speak on this platform. It's like, this is definitely like one of the things that's disturbing me. And maybe I will try to reach out to DHL for a comment and see if we can get that out by tomorrow. And maybe from a global point of view, Felix, I know you've been waiting for this. What's happening with Zach and the name change?
I think, guys, first of all, to give you guys a greater overview, is we need to understand that we usually have the universe and we've never really discovered. People usually say scientists and fanatics of space. If you're probably doing astrography, then you've probably known that there's always the edge of the universe. You guys always say that there's a high possibility that this is our universe. Then there's a high possibility that there's another you, right?
How does that relate to metaverse?
Just relax.
Okay. No, I know you're a space fanatic and I don't want us to go there.
What usually happens is whenever you're looking at metaverse, it's always just a speculation, you know, that we could have the space, we could have, the universe is not really in the way that we see it. It's either, first of all, I think just about having, I'm just trying to get the word right. It's always just about interacting in, now that is in the text. Metaverse is always just about, you know, getting.
Sorry, getting?
I think it's just about getting a computer generated. Okay, whatever it is, Ali. Guys, just probably just hold on to that. Ali, back to you for a minute. Just give me a minute, guys. Ali?
So, I guess you didn't get it. Last night, Facebook announced it's going to move. How should I put this nicely? Facebook is now Meta. That's a simple thing. And when I say Facebook, I don't mean Facebook, the platform. I mean Facebook, the company that owns Facebook Messenger, the company that owns Instagram, and the company that owns WhatsApp. And during the announcement, Mark Zuckerberg, there's different ways to describe him, but Mark Zuckerberg said that this is actually, you know what? It's the future of Facebook, looking to find new ways to connect people. Now, the whole Meta thing just blew up on the media space from guys saying that, you know what, Facebook is just trying to rebrand, and that's because mostly they've had a lot of reputation issues. You know, we've had claims that Facebook allegedly collects too much data from people and allegedly misuses that data for advertising purposes, and also allegedly, I'm gonna use this word a lot, is hush-hush on some of the harms of the platform. So, you know, moving to Meta kind of helps it distance itself from all that and have a new beginning. But then something that really caught my eye is how Mark Zuckerberg actually delivered one of the things when making the announcement, which was move to a world of virtual reality. We had guys in the room wearing the VR gear for Facebook, which is Oculus Rift, and Mark was in a room and just interacting with people from a virtual space that looked rather dystopian, which doesn't really give me much hope. And I don't know, Felix, what do you think about this whole transition? Do you think now that, in as much as the platform, the social media platform Facebook, is not changing the name, is guys might take it up differently? Do you think guys be like, oh, please add me on Meta?
I don't know, guys, but you can join the metaverse, you know, the universe, metaverse, multiverse. Yeah, so guys, I was confusing universe with metaverse. So with multiverse, metaverse with multiverse. So multiverse is the possibility of having a lot of other universes, because we have one universe, that's what we know of, Ali. But then this thing, guys, actually, usually, you know, guys say that, hey, if they're main, then let's call them multiverse, you know.
Right.
Yeah. But metaverse is generally just a cloud computing. It's actually computing where we have a virtual reality in place where guys can interact with almost anything within the computer generated environment. So technically, that's again what we're seeing here in metaverse. And Facebook is just telling guys that they're getting into a phase where they're going to bring in a lot of other products, and Facebook might not be the brand, considering that Facebook has always been seen as, you know, social media, not really a tech company. Mm-hmm. So Facebook is looking at being looked at from another angle, which is tech, you know. And so we're seeing here in this case that for Facebook, we're seeing a new beginning for the company. And Zuck, I think when they were releasing the financials, I think it was actually Wednesday, and Zuck actually said, hey, we know there's been a lot of news out there, and there's been a lot of guys taking up data from the company and pushing it out there. But we're looking at starting with a new phase, and, you know, just giving guys a better view, and giving guys the metaverse. Let's call it that.
Right.
Yeah, and also just representing the brands that Meta will now have under them. And also one thing the guys would notice is that Facebook is actually changing its code from FB, which we've seen on the NASDAQ for, since the company listed, it's always traded under the ticker for FB, and now we're seeing this is going to be MTVRS. MTVS. That would be Metaverse.
Yeah, you know, something that Facebook is going to start trading under MVRS on December 1st, yes?
Yeah.
Good. Something that I just wanted that out of the way. Something that actually had the concerns of many people here were the legal concerns. Because here's the thing, yeah? At the moment, what Facebook has is what you give it. So, you know, your name, age, location, gender, what you like, what you don't like, such things. Things that actually require you to input. But then the thing is, in a metaverse, especially a world of virtual reality, which is what seems like where Facebook is going, there are other things that can be collected here. There's data on your body language, there's data on your physiological, you know, responses, and who you're interacting with in the so-called metaverse and how. Do you think it's something that maybe we should be worried about it? Because Facebook is already putting in a lot of money. It's putting in around putting in around, I can't remember the exact figure. I probably have to go back to the company company press release to check out how much they're putting for creators. But I think it's around $150 million for content creators just to push in more content on the Metaverse.
I still think it's a big challenge. It's just really interesting to see which direction that Zuck actually say, you know, what direction, because he just said we're moving into a new space.
Right.
Yeah, I would first just wait and see on what direction. Because we've seen a lot of things really happen in Facebook itself, where Facebook is saying the new generation guys are not signing up. So technically,
what do you mean the new generation?
Okay, the same guys below 30, they're having very few interactions with guys. And that technically leaves the older guys, the older generation, Facebook age. Guys who joined Facebook between 2008, all the way down to, you know, later on, say about from 2008 all the way later on to maybe about 2015 or thereabout.
Mm-hmm.
That is when Facebook had its peak. And now we're seeing now the company saying that it's not in the same level.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I know we don't have much, but then I'm looking at...
Facebook says they're doing a lot of stuff, including going head-to-head with companies that we've seen really much. ByteDance, that is TikTok. The thing they're moving through with introducing Reels on the app and a lot of stuff. But yeah, let's see how this.
Yeah, because here's something that I saw on the About Facebook page was under building the metaverse. Here were three major categories. We had virtual reality, augmented reality, and smart glasses. And that's exactly why I thought maybe Facebook will now be able to, you know, understand, you know, your interactions and your responses from a virtual reality perspective, as opposed to a content perspective, as it did or as it does in its various social media platforms, which is, you know, like the way it does on Instagram and the way it does on Facebook. But again, it's a wait and see. Shares of the company did rise yesterday following the announcement. It looks like investors are a little bit excited about it. But then let's see how that pans out.
Yeah.
This is actually all we had for today's podcast, guys. There's more.
Really, Ali? We're just cutting it that short?
No, we're not cutting it that short. We've covered everything we promised to cover. Chill.
Oh, my God. Did we really cover everything?
See. Anyway.
I feel like we haven't covered a lot. We haven't really covered a lot. But we've also covered a lot. We've been here for 1 hour. Can you imagine?
I know, right?
I think it's very interesting. But guys, in case you're wondering, next week on Monday, we'll definitely be talking about a lot of stuff. First of all, East African Portland Cement released the financials today. It's going to be very interesting on Monday as we look onto how the company performed and how everything else has been performing. So please plan and join me on Markets Monday as we talk about this. Also, a few things that we'll definitely be talking about is AIB Access Investment Bank announced yesterday that they were giving out a sell recommendation for Safaricom, right? Bring the company's price from levels of 44 where the company is trading at right now with a focus of about 38 shillings. You definitely want to get our opinion on that. We'll definitely be talking to this about you guys on Monday. So that will be something that I know we'll definitely be able to look into. I know there's a lot of stuff that we definitely will have talked about today. We'll definitely be keeping you guys on board onto that bit. The first one as well would also be news about Centum. That I know there was news today earlier on that Centum is targeting about $5 billion worth of acquisitions over the next few years. There's been a lot of news about Centum in the recent weeks. First of all, it's been about guys just figuring out how to, you know, get to value Centum, Ali. Guys have always been looking at valuing this company. Are you looking at it from a real estate company? Are you looking at it from a company that has, I think Centum has the opportunity to become Kenya's Berkshire. Guys have mentioned that over time. I know we were having that discussion today on HISA app. In case you're not on HISA, you definitely would want to download HISA and just follow the discussion. We also had it as well on the Telegram forum. And there's a lot really that's happening within this space. And so one of the things that I know for me, really, really looking into would be, what is the next step? Sentinel 2.0? Yeah, but most of this, and also how the markets perform, we definitely have him on to that date on Monday.
Yeah, you had the man. Monday between 9:30 and 10?
9:45.
Right. Join Markets Monday for the updates. Between now and Monday, you can listen to this podcast and all our other podcasts directly via the HISA app or on Spotify, Anchor, Castbox, Google Podcasts, or wherever you're listening to this podcast. My name is Ali Mwakaneno. I was your host.
My name is Philip Richard, and I was the co-host of this.
Sure.
Awesome. I was the co-host for today's session. Thank you guys for joining us, and we wish you guys luck.
Goodbye.